हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति शांति ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जानिता।
Okay, so Adhyaya 1, Adhikarna 3, we started Anucheda 8. To refresh our memories, there were first two verses quoted from the second canto, second chapter. One was verse 15, one was verse 27, and they are, O King, when the renounced yogi, seated comfortably on his seat, desires to give up his body, he does not attach the mind to time or place. Conquering life, he controls the senses by the mind. And, O King, if one endeavors for Brahmaloka or the playgrounds of the aerial beings who are endowed with eight mystic powers in the variegated universe, one goes to those places with the mind and the senses. Then Srila Jiva Goswami continues, having spoken of immediate liberation and gradual liberation, Krama Mukti in Jnana and Astanga Yoga in the verse above, and having spoken of what is superior to that, offering actions to the Lord as a cause of Bhakti Yoga, it must be concluded that direct Bhakti Yoga is even better.
Yeah. So the Lord and the Acharyas are recommending that one goes straight for the direct, you know, the Navavida Bhakti, that one's absorbed in those nine forms of devotional service, these direct aspects, you know, with, and then that focus on those, you know, five primary aspects that Lord Chaitanya has given. Rupa Goswami gave, but then Lord Chaitanya points them out because it's all coming from him. He's explained to Rupa Goswami. So those things of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshiping the deity, living in the Dham. These are the five principal things. And within that, then you see is everything else to be contained. You know, you're chanting, hearing, so you remember, you're going to worship, you know, you're associated with the devotees, so you'll be worshiping the devotees, taking that association. You'll be offering, you know, worshiping the deity, so that's that fourth one. Offering prayers naturally to the deity, then that whole mood of surrendering, you know, I mean, everything that you do as a service to the Lord. You have that mood of friendship. You catch that the Lord as a person, he has particular desires. You're trying to fulfill those through the preaching mission and that full surrender to Krishna. So this is then what's directly recommended. And then as secondary religious elements, then naturally the varnashram, because through that, then you maintain the body because the body is necessary for performing service. And so then you situate yourself accordingly, depending upon the nature and how much facility one requires. And so that's the recommended platform. So the secondary, if you're preaching in that, then, you know, there'll be more consideration of using it, but it's still secondary. And if you're, and if not, then like the Paitan Sadhu or like that, then they don't even have to worry about those things. But we even see as Haridas Thakur, he's preaching, following the etiquette and everything. And at the same time, as he's not needing to take advantage of those other positions, he just situates himself in these five direct activities by, you know, mainly focusing on hearing, chanting, you know, and discussing with the devotees. So that's what's recommended. Then according to your needs, you can increase the volume of the, you know, varnashram and these other aspects. But ideally, you don't, you still is naishkarmi. You're doing it from that platform of goodness to engage in the Lord's service and pure goodness. And so then there's no effect on having more facility. In other words, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, they're fully absorbed in the Lord's service, even though he is managing the world. So, but, you know, and still then it stays within that aspect of Naishkarmya, which is being then engaged in pure bhakti. But then as we see is that no, there is that aspect of, you know, the interest in the karma, the facility, you know, those things. Then they can be addressed, and then through renunciation, then you can connect them to Krishna. Like that. So instead of from that platform of mentality of sannyas, then you're platforming from renunciation. And so it still works, you know, and it's it's still direct, but it's still using a lot of indirect aspects. The secondary becomes more prominent, and then it comes to the primary. Then, you know, less than that is that the devotional service going on, and it's primarily about the secondary. So that's then becomes more of an indirect, or it's a slower path. Not as slow as just where one's not having that faith in Krishna. So the dividing factor will be faith in Krishna, that you surrender and take up that process of Shraddha, the prema. If that happens, then we see that there's going to be the aspect of, then it'll be there, and all these other aspects will be, you know, very temporarily kind of aspects. And so we don't have to worry about them too much. But, you know, you have to keep an eye on them, because if you're not careful, then the problem is they can come and they can overwhelm your devotional service. You can get distracted. So this is basically the minimum that we're talking about being absorbed in. And that's, you know, what's being recommended here is you take to that direct path, even though one may not be fully qualified for it, but at least you have faith in it and know that it's the better path and you're trying for it, though you're addressing, you know, the material, the condition needs. But when the process is mainly about the condition needs and your one's willing, you know, is pious, willing to go to God for that and this and that, that will start to become slower. You're turning to the Lord, that's good. So facilities will be gained, but it's slower. And then if you don't have that, you're not using that path of bhakti, you know, it consciously, then you're just working within karma and gyan. But according to Shastra, it's still recommended over not using Shastra. And so, you know, it's a solid religious platform. It's just that philosophy and that devotion aren't very strong. Yes. Does that make sense here? So what Prabhupada is giving us, instead of what is being mentioned here, but we have to be progressive and move forward. We shouldn't be falling back into, like we see nowadays, worshiping the demigods, or getting into this, you know, professional mentality, or getting too distracted by all these new agey kind of things like that, or, you know, getting into, you know, management and business, the corporate kind of thing, because you know it all, then you're doing okay and all that. And you're, you know, in fact, doing better than others. All these things are not at all recommended. We didn't see the Prabhupada was using those or instructing the devotees in those. So these kind of aspects are just, they're just a burden. They're just extra distractions, extra burden that will have to be seriously addressed at some point and given up. And if not, then one will have to continue in the material world in whatever position that you get to do those things. You know, you like the demigods, then you go to the heavenly planets. You like the position, that professional, you know, how organized, the heavenly planets. You know, so one wants to avoid that kind of a thing. It just means another birth. It's not really conducive. Well, you know, it could be pious, but pious is not good enough. You know, many look at it that, oh, it's pious, it's good, it's motive goodness, it's progressive. Yeah. But only up to a particular point. We're talking about devotion. You know, it's like, you know, how you say, you know, riding, you know, your three-year-old's tricycle, you know, or, you know, taking an airplane. So what Prabhupada's given is on that higher platform, and this dropping down to the lower and being quite confident that, you know, it's as good, if not better, than That is a serious, serious, serious mistake. That, any questions on that? Yes, Jagadishji.
It seems that all the devotees understand very strongly that making money of, you know, Shravanam Kirtan Vishnu Smaranam is not a good idea. So it seems that they go into the Vedic direction and offer, because society, I mean, society of the devotees, but also society in general, and they offer different services, as you have mentioned, and they don't consider what they do as Shuddha Bhakti business for them. But, you know, to make it attractive, somehow or other, they connect it with devotional service. So then people buy it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just occupation, you can do that. But it's a matter of what's your intent when you're doing this. When you say is that, you know, you can't make money off those five, they're not supposed to make money. You know, that's like saying, you know, I'm breathing and, I rest and I eat, I go to the toilet, I take a shower. But, you know, you can't make money off of that, you know. So therefore, then we have to give that up, you know, that focus on, you know, taking care of these things and get into something practical that makes money. It's not a very strong platform that one actually understands what's going on. No one's ever expected that you're going to make money off of the primary aspects of devotional service. That's why Varnashram is there. Grihasthas maintain themselves. And they do that through, four basic categories of occupation. And so that's just accepted. That's secondary. And so that maintains this. But it doesn't mean that it has to be your lifestyle, it has to be your philosophy, and all these kinds of things. So that's the difficulty, is that there's a faith in that idea of that pure devotional service. So that's good. But there's not enough understanding to understand what's primary and secondary, and understand how the secondary has its value as long as it's connected to Krishna. So it makes them money. And then that money they use for their devotional service. So that way it's connected. But if they get distracted by that philosophy and take up that kind of lifestyle, they're doing the yoga scene, so you start to dress and act like a yogi, even at home, then they've missed the point. You know, they've missed the point. They haven't caught that, because that's your occupation, doesn't define how you live. Live is ashram. Right, in the ashram, that's the spiritual platform. So it doesn't matter what your occupation as a devotee, then we're getting up in the morning, taking our bath, you know, dressing, or putting our tilak, and then we're going through the whole aspects of, you know, then the worship of the deities and the japa and hearing Bhagavatam and all these different activities that are recommended in the Pancharatra. And then we have, then after prasad, then we have our occupation during the day, whatever that may be. And then we, you know, in the evening again, back to our spiritual activities, our bath, and, you know, doing evening sadhana, time with the family, all these kind of things. And so these go on. It doesn't matter what your varna is. The ashram is the same. There's no separate ashram. Is there a Shudra ashram and a Brahmin ashram? No, it's all Brahminical activities because it's all centered around Krishna. That's the point of ashram. It's centered around Krishna. And so we don't have a separate thing there, but you have to see that the lifestyle is our lifestyle. And then what you do as an occupation, you do that. You can say, but it's just natural, you know, it's comfortable, you're wearing that, then you come home and do this. What if at the office you wear a three-piece suit with a tie? When you come home, do you wear a three-piece suit with a tie when you're sitting down watching television and eating popcorn and hanging out with the dog? No. So then they can distinguish at the office, I wear this. And then when I come home, I do like this and that. So why can't we do that as devotees? The karmis can do it. Why can't we do it? You know, I mean, that it's not saying, oh, we're being modern. No, you're not. You're just being lazy. So one has to appreciate that we have our lifestyle, and then there's how you make your money. You know, so
yes, they're
two separate things. Yes.
Thank
and if that's
much.
Seen, then that's the point, is the secondary that you make your money. That's part of varnashram. So especially as grihastha, then there's no problem in doing that. And it doesn't mean that you're not doing direct devotional service. You're using the secondary activities to support your direct devotional service. So when devotees go outside of that and they start taking on the philosophy of those things, you know, yoga philosophy and new age philosophy and modern political platitudes, those philosophies, that's where then it starts to deviate from pure devotional service. That's where the danger is. The one who's engaging in these fields isn't the danger. It's that when you start to take on the mentality of that field, that's where the danger is. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah, so devotees should be sure about that, and that how much they can connect it to Krishna, and that's good, nice. But at the same time, is don't think that, you know, that replaces understanding devotional service in its direct form. Yeah? Yeah, okay. Anything else, sir?
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
You had something left of you?
Maharaj, I want to ask, I have one friend, she joined Krishna Consciousness 30 years ago, and she is a soft preacher, but she is a very nice devotee, means she chants japa very, very attentively, but she doesn't read books of Srila Prabhupada and doesn't listen lectures because she doesn't have time. And when I talk with her, she's in a very, how to say, devotional attitude, means she always wants people to be connected with Krishna, but as with to God. And she considers that if they will be connected with God, they will, after some time, they will get devotional service. And I want to ask you, is it, should her bhakti or not, it's a mixed bhakti in her?
See, the thing is she's doing these other things. The soft preaching, is that she's actually doing preaching programs, or she just works into her occupation some preaching
it's
elements?
It's her occupation, but she doesn't need to work because her husband is a very rich businessman, but she likes
okay,
to
that's nice. That's
it's
nice.
Like a way to help.
Okay,
to
but the thing, yes, but the point is that, you know, as much as she can bring them closer to Krishna and that, then that's nice. Get them to chant, get them to, you know, offer their prasad, you know, these kind of things. But especially chant, then it's always good. But then the thing is what I don't understand is, if she doesn't have to work in this and that, why does she say she has no time to read or hear lectures? You know, because then she can adjust her schedule so she does have some time.
Because she is a very famous psychologist in our country, and so many people want to solve their
problem. Okay. So let's look at it like this. So many people want to contact her, okay? And so is she spending 24 hours a day, you know, counseling these different persons? I mean, 24, literally. Is she spending 24?
Maybe 12, and then she worship.
Okay, so then 12. Then 12. Okay. Why 12? Why not 10? Why not 14? You know, if you say, well, why don't you spend 14 hours? You know, you're spending 12 hours helping the devotees. Why not 14 or 16? Oh, I couldn't worship my deities, or there's no time for the family, or I have to cook. So then why is it that, you know, reading or hearing from Prabhupada isn't part of that important aspect? She's giving 12 hours a day to the devotees, and that's nice. That's really good. But if she can't do that, then how does she know? How will she have the determination? You know, I mean, it's nice. There'll be good sentiments there, and that's strong. And as long as it goes on, then it's nice. But why not? Why not then, you know, do 10 hours or 11 hours and, you know, and take some time for hearing and chanting? I mean, for reading and knowing the philosophy. Otherwise, they're preaching. But if she's not inspired as much by these things, then it just becomes sentimental. And after a while, it's connect them to God. How do you define connect to God? What's your definition of connect to God? You know, like that. And so therefore, then that definition with time may become weaker and weaker. My point is she's spending 12 hours. Why 12? Why not 10? And when she says no time.
If you're always involved in association with people, it's very difficult then to read books.
That's what I'm saying. 10 hours means, okay, so she means even if she has time, she can't focus. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Okay, so then listen to lectures. When she's taking a bath in the morning, is she talking to those devotees? She's got waterproof earphones, and so she can take a bath and talk to devotees and counsel them?
No.
So, and then when she's dressing and combing her hair and picking out her outfits and walking around the bedroom there, you know, what to do and looking at this and that, why can't she listen to a lecture at that time? When she wakes up in the morning, put on a lecture.
No, she said she doesn't have a test because her mind always in a teaching to people.
So, that's not an excuse.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Why not listen to Prabhupada? That would be like saying, I'm so busy working, I have no time to eat. You know, I'm just going to go on working and serving people and not eating. Is that going to work in the long run? Is it going to work? Maybe if you're an orchid, it might work. So in other words, if she's not nourishing the soul through hearing from the acharya, then how is she going to be sure that the direction she's following is correct? She's just using her own mind to say what she's doing is good. You know, she's thinking about these things, but that's nice. Why not listen to some lectures? If it's a matter of I'd like to, but I can't because I'm so absorbed, okay, then don't. But just keep yourself busy. And that way, then there's no nonsense, no maya, and then you keep going. And by doing this, then the heart will get purified. And then at some time, she'll be able to do both. You know what I'm saying? So if that sincerity is there, then yeah, go on like it is here. But she should actually want to hear.
Maharaja, if she chants japa very attentively, can it help her develop?
Of course. Oh, that's a very nice thing that she's doing that very nicely. And you said she's worshiping her deities. So yes, you do that. And if she can't therefore study in that, then fine. As long as she keeps herself very, very fixed and regulated in her chanting and in her deity worship and, you know, whatever she else does in her sadhana, then it'll work. Why not? You know, maybe as time goes, she gets older, then, you know, things might adjust. Point is to keep yourself busy. So by doing this, she's keeping herself busy. It's fine. You know, if she thinks, I don't need to hear, I don't need to read, that's a problem. But if she says, I would like to read, but I can't because I'm thinking too much of this and that, I can't focus, then yeah, continue as she is. And with time, as the heart gets purified, then she may be able to sit and read.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Jai Ho. Adibha.
Okay, so now...
Huh? Okay, yes, please.
Sorry. Now Srila Jiva Goswami is quoting from the same chapter, verse 33. Nahyato nya shiva panta vishata sam shritav iha vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga yato bhavet. For those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Krishna, end quote. Udhriti, Srila Prabhupada. As will be clarified in the next verse, devotional service or direct bhakti yoga is the only absolute and auspicious means of deliverance from the grip of material existence. There are many indirect methods for deliverance of material existence, but none of them is as easy and auspicious as bhakti yoga. The means of jnana and yoga and other allied disciplines are not independent in delivering a performer. Such activities help one to reach the stage of bhakti yoga after many, many years. In the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, it is said that those who are attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute are liable to many troubles in the pursuit of their desired goal. And the empiricist philosophers, searching after the Absolute Truth, realize the importance of Vasudeva realization as all in all after many, many births. Bhagavad Gita 7.19. As far as yoga systems are, it's also said in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, notice there's many, many births. So we have to understand if you're using these indirect methods, you know, situating people in goodness and all this, this kind of what they call soft preaching, that you're talking many, many births. You know, so if that's all you can do, you know, that's what you're comfortable, that's what you have facility, you help a little bit, so then yes, it's helping, it's good. But never consider that it's good as the direct, it's just as black as it is. And so then one takes that humble attitude and then it'll be nice, Krishna will be happy. But if one tries to equate it equally with the direct, or there's a pride about it, then there'll be some weakness there in the practice. Please.
As far as yoga is, am I able to be heard?
Now you are.
No. It's so weird how this sometimes just doesn't work at all. Okay.
Yeah.
As far as yoga systems are concerned, it is also said in the Bhagavad Gita 6:47. That amongst the mystics who pursue the absolute truth, the one who is always engaged in the service of the Lord is the greatest of all. And the last instruction in the Bhagavad Gita 1866 advises fully surrendering, leaving all other engagements for civilization and liberation from material bondage. And the purport of all Vedic literatures is to induce one to accept the transcendental loving service of the Lord by all means. As already explained in the texts of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, either direct bhakti yoga or the means which ultimately culminate in bhakti yoga without any tinge of fruitive activity constitutes the highest form of religion. Everything else is simply a waste of time for the performer. Srila Sridhar Swami and all other acharyas like Jiva Goswami agree that bhakti yoga is not only easy, simple, natural, and free from trouble, but it is the only source of happiness for the human being. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.33 purport.
Yeah, so here's that also what will you there. So what we're talking here is that convinced of it and directly engaged in it. So that was the Dhrita Shraddha. And then you may have the Kamal Shraddha, but you're convinced that, yes, this is what I want to do, even though one's practices and that may not always be as strong as they can be, and one's distracted by various desires. But one's intent is not to be, you know, engaged on the material platform, then that's also going to be very nice to bring you there. So we see that what happens is it's about the mentality. As long as that mentality is there, that intent, that spirit, you know, as Prabhupada talks about in the Gita, then that aspect of that spirit, that's then what's important to bring forward and see that that's correct. And so that happens by, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, associating with devotees, you know, hearing from the acharyas. This is then what will you can judge if what you're doing is correct. So that's the idea. Is that yeah? Yeah. Okay.
Then, okay. Yeah. So then continue. That is Srila Jiva Goswami. He's now referring to Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary. The commentary says, month of liberation or austerity or yoga. However, the wise accept, sorry, should be a comma. However, the wise accept this action, which pleases the Lord. That is expressed in this verse. From this action, bhakti yoga arises. There is no other path without obstacles. There is no easier path, Shiva. What is indicated by yataha, yataha, arise prema, bhakti yogataha. For it is said, savai pung sang paro dharma. This highest dharma is that which pleases the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:6. End quote. And that's the end of that in Anucheda.
Okay. So it would appear here is that when he said it was on the path of yoga or renunciation, no? So if that's done in the context of devotional service, then it also becomes, it's pleasing to the Lord and it's uplifting. So then you get when it appears here, maybe it's going back now. Halidranitaiji, is this that he's taking these more indirect aspects? This means, in other words, there's one's using the secondary aspects and one's focused in those, but because it's done in context of devotion, then it makes it glorious. Is it taking is what's being recommended taking it down to that level, or what? Does that make some sense?
I couldn't catch Hare Krishna.
Meaning that, because I was talking that it's just down to this point of having gained that Shraddha, you know, so that Shraddha, the prema, in within that. So whether it's as a neophyte or whether it's as a Madhyama, that would be what we're talking about as the recommended path. But it appears here by the wording that I don't know if that means that within the neophyte stage that these aspects of karma and jnana and all that, or even if one's more mature, you just situate yourself there because that's what's coming. And so then you're progressing and that's what it's talking about. Or does it mean where there's a bit more focus on the secondary, there's more value within the jnana and within the yoga, but because you're doing it in the context in relationship to bhakti, therefore it's glorious. So as the using that extension to establish that bhakti is the essential element, or is this, you know, how far is the recommendation here on how much you are absorbed in the Lord, you know, and, you know, are you on that path that you have that Shraddha, that you've started the path of devotional service, you know, pure devotional service, or is it even talking before that if there's some devotion?
No, it's about bringing the bhakti aspect in it as a central feature, Maharaj. Right now, they distinguished so other things because it goes later. On bringing out bhakti.
Okay, so he's just talking about if you add bhakti to whatever you're doing, that's the glory because bhakti is the real thing.
Yes.
Okay. So I've just been speaking a bit of, maybe ahead.
Yeah, anyways, actually, it's always a mix like that. Unless and until we talk about pure Shuddha Bhakti, it's always a mix like that. But at this point, the focus is bringing out Bhakti and making it as the most important. Then you can, like, you know, start focusing on where is the mix.
Okay.
If you do it in the beginning, that start distinguishing like that, then sometimes, like, one may sideline Bhakti as not important.
So, yes, you'll get too much into the general rules. Okay.
So that's why this whole section is still discussing on that. And in the next Adhikarana also discusses more on that. And after that, then there is the description of various levels of bhakti. That's where then Jiva Goswami elaborates about all the Mishra bhaktis.
Okay. So then we'll get there. So does that make sense? So therefore, as much as we can add Krishna consciousness to our life, you know, in any way, shape, or form, then that's going to be glorious, because it will help take us forward. So that's what's giving. So the direct means that it's done to please Krishna, you know, in some way or another, how much it's on the platform of purity or how much it's mixed. But there is that intent to try to please Krishna, and that's what you're trying to get. So then, you know, those examples that were given before, you know, those questions before, then the essential point is that connection to Krishna. And so if one can't, like, you know, we saw before that one, you know, it was mentioned that one Mataji, she's so busy and all that. And so, but at least if there's that devotion, she's, you know, chanting, she's doing her deity worship, she's trying to, you know, she sees it in the context of her preaching, you know, trying to please Krishna. So in that way, then it's going to be good. It's going to be dynamic. It's going to be uplifting. But, you know, if there's some mix in there, that then we'll see. Jiva Goswami will describe that later. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So Charterji.
Okay, so then the vritti. The next Anucheda substantiates that all the Vedas approve Bhakti Yoga as the best process for attaining the Supreme Lord. Anucheda 29. Bhakti Yoga is approved by all the Vedas. Bhagavan Brahma Kartsneya Trir Anviksya Manis Saya Tad Adya Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. Brahma, with fixed mind, reviewed three times the Vedas completely with his intelligence and determined that process which produces prema in the self. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.34. Udhriti, Srila Prabhupada. Sri Shukadeva Goswami is referring to the highest Vedic authority, Lord Brahma, who is the qualitative incarnation of Godhead. The Vedas were taught to Brahmaji in the beginning of the material creation. Although Brahmaji was to hear Vedic instructions directly from the personality of Godhead in order to satisfy the inquisitiveness of all prospective students of the Vedas, Brahmaji, just like a scholar, as generally done, attention, concentrating on the purpose of the Vedas, and after scrutinizingly examining the whole process, he ascertained that becoming a pure, unalloyed devotee of the Lord Sri Krishna is the topmost perfection of all religious principles. And this is the last explained it.
Jagadish Prabhu is giving thumbs down. He is not hearing anything.
The audio.
No. It appears you're not there at all.
Hare Krishna.
We don't even get the music anymore. Ah, yes.
Yeah, I'll read the last sentence. And this is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita directly presented by the personality of Godhead. The Vedic conclusion is thus accepted by all acharyas, and those who are against this conclusion are only Vedavada Rathas, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita 2.42. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.34 purport. And continuing with the Jiva Goswami's
yes, please.
Brahma, unchanging, with a fixed mind, Kutastha, reviewed the Vedas three times thoroughly, and by his intelligence, determined bhakti yoga by which rati for the Lord, Atman, develops. The word Atman refers to the Lord since that is in agreement with the concluding statement later.
Recording in progress.
The derivation of the Atman indicates this. The Atma indicates the Supreme Lord since he spreads everywhere and creates everything like a mother. Matritvat. I think there is some kind of resound, Maharaj, or am I clear?
Well, yeah, no, you're okay. It's just Charu Chandra, there were two of him.
Oh, okay.
And now there's one.
Okay.
So I think in the interim between the two, we're hearing that.
Or the Lord himself, endowed with all qualities like omniscience and self-revelation, Bhagavan, reviewed the Vedas, Brahma, as a pastime to extract the meaning of all the Vedas, imitating sages who do so. Only the Lord can review the Vedas recited by unlimited Brahmas and composed of the qualities of unlimited Vaikunthas. In this meaning, Kutastaha means the Lord is fixed in one form over all time. The Lord himself says, what do the Vedas instruct as action? What is the final meaning of the Vedas? What alternatives do the Vedas arise, do the Vedas raise? No one except me or my dear devotee knows the intended meaning of the Vedas. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:21-42. This finishes the Anucheda, Maharaj.
Okay. So what we see here is that only Krishna knows, because he knows himself. And then his dear devotee knows. So unless we're hearing from the acharyas their version of what is, you know, recommended, what is devotional service and all that, we cannot know, because you cannot know by just through intelligence. We see here Brahma says he used his intelligence, but that's under the direction of Krishna. So then he's engaging his intelligence in the service of the Lord. Then the knowledge will descend, you know, and Krishna hear it. But if there's that mood of that no, through intelligence, I'll understand, one will never be able to understand. So the aspect here is that therefore, under the Lord's direction and under the Lord's, you know, guidance, then he's able to practice, you know, apply and study what has been given to him by the Lord. Then he sees that from that, the essence is devotional service, no other essence to the Veda. Everything else may be, you know, principles that are supporting this primary aspect of pure devotion. And as much as they do, they have their value. But if they're seen separately on their own, that way there's devotional service and then there's these other things, then one has actually missed the point, you know. So, yes, please.
Vritti. The next Anucheda describes that Bhakti Yoga, characterized by hearing, glorifying, remembering and worshipping the Supreme Lord, is the best process, because the devotees who follow this process purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and thus go back to Godhead. Hence, there is no need for any other method of purification, because bhakti automatically purifies one from all unwanted desires. Anucheda 30. Previously, the question was asked, O Master, please tell me what men must hear, chant, remember and worship, or what they should not hear, chant, remember or worship. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 1:19-38. The answer is given in the conclusion. O King, therefore, at all times and all places, without restriction, men should hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord with full concentration of mind. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.36. The word cha indicates serving the Lord's feet. Then the results of these activities are illustrated. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of the, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.37. Maharaj?
Yes.
So should I keep reading?
Yes, I think so. Please.
Udriti Srila Prabhupada. The sufferings of human society are due to a polluted aim of life, namely lording it over the material resources. The more human society engages in exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord. And thus, the distress of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. The human necessities of life are fully supplied by the Lord in the shape of food grains, milk, fruit, wood, stone, sugar, silk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, etc., in sufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as the living beings on each and every planet within the universe. The supply source is complete, and only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. There is no need of machines and tools or huge steel plants for artificially creating comforts of life. Life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. The highest perfectional thinking of human society is suggested here by Sukadev Goswami, namely, sufficiently hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. For men in this age of Kali, when they have lost the perfect vision of life, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the torchlight by which to see the real path. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has commented on the Kartam Kathamritam mentioned in this verse and has indicated Srimad Bhagavatam to be the nectarian message of the personality of Godhead. By sufficient hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the polluted aim of life, namely lording it over matter, will subside, and the people in general, in all parts of the world, will be able to live a peaceful life of knowledge and bliss. Thus, by the process of Bhakti Yoga, directly accepted, as suggested in this verse, by sufficient hearing of the transcendental message of the Lord, the material contamination is directly eliminated without once attempting to contemplate the impersonal Virat conception of the Lord. And by practicing Bhakti Yoga, if the performer is not purified from the material contamination, he must be a pseudo devotee. For such an imposture, there is no remedy from being freed from material entanglement. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.37 purport.
What was that point he made? What means defining why he's the pseudo devotee?
If the performer, and by practicing Bhakti Yoga, if the performer is not purified from the material contamination, he must be a pseudo devotee. Means he's not sincere.
Yeah.
Or he's doing something
else. He's doing all the activities. Yeah. He may be purified by that association with, his material desires will be growing. because it'll be converted into the piety. It'll be converted into pious works, given, you know, that kind of mentality. But piety in the realm that he desires it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. This is that one where you're talking about the artificial me.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, very.
And I think another. It was in lecture, I think, somewhere. In context of this, Prabhupada speaks more about how, like, you know, getting plastic and all didn't make our life any better. Yeah. It just made worse.
Yeah, it seems convenient, but you lose out all on the nice things, you know. It's just like, it's convenient to go, and then they just give you a bag, right, you know, at the market. But then now they're recommending you take your own bags. But that's what people market. They're going to give you the goods, but you have to carry them. So you have to bring the bag to carry them, you know. Yeah. So it's interesting, is that, yes, please.
It's to the point of that we don't need the machines, and we can only live by a lifestyle. Recently, I heard one lecture of Srila Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj, and he explained about timetable of Vedic person. He said that in Vedic times, people usually worked only 1 hour and a half, and not more. And all other times they were able to do some spiritual practice or to associate with the relatives and friends. And I'm trying to understand how it's possible by farming, by agriculture, work on 1 hour and a half. Because we see nowadays if people have farms, they need to work very hardly and during whole days. And even my friend, I thought it's only in Kazakhstan, but my friend, she's from Hungary, from the farm, and she said that there are also very, devotees need very long time work in the fields, and it's very difficult work. And is it maybe only in Kali Yuga, the nature doesn't provide us as easily, and that's why we need some machines and electricity, or... or we do something not properly. Why far that it's very difficult to read books and to change up if we have a farm.
Okay. So now if we're talking about the farming, then you're going to have to prepare the field, you know, and then you're going to plant. Right? But now once you've planted, is there anything to do immediately? No, you have to wait a bit and then the weeds grow. So you go through a weed. You may have to do, you know, you have to water. You know, you may have to weed a few times, water regularly, and then there's going to be harvesting. So when you're preparing and planting, you know, when you're doing that weeding and then when you're doing the harvesting, that will be lots of work. But then after that, then before that, after that, then where's the work? You know what I'm saying? So if you take that and average it out, then, you know, like he said, is if he says it's 1.5 hours a day, you know, Prabhupada said it's not much, you know, a few hours here and there. Be some other things, you know, you have to fix the fence or, you know, you have to take the cows out or bring them back. But, you know, like Krishna and the cowherd boys, they're going out most of the time. They're playing now and again. They have to go and bring the cows here, take them there, or round them up and bring them back. You understand? So the point being made is that there's going to be plenty of time for dealing with the spiritual life and, you know, the local, you know, and like Maharaj said, you know, and the family interactions and things like that. So she's looking at it, yes, when you're planting, it's a lot of work. But when you're not, when the planting's done, then where's the work? Yes, no?
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're averaging it out. You know, it's just like, let's say, in the house, let's say the wife is at home. So then there's going to be times that she's doing a lot of cleaning and all that, but then there's plenty of time when she's sitting around and you know, not necessarily doing anything. You know, that's why they've created soap operas in the afternoon. No?
Also, Maharaj, the work only starts when the sun rises and then it stops when the sun sets. And all the spiritual activities are in Brahma Muhurta and in the evenings. So, the day is very regulated when you're dealing with these direct activities with the nature. But now when we do artificially, then we like have lights, this, that, and when we do whenever it pleases us. So by that we'll neither do the spiritual activities nor we are fixed in our material activities properly.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Should I start?
Yeah, so the natural lifestyle then, let's see what's the time. The natural lifestyle then gives rise to, it does fill the day and keep you busy, and it's also then regulated according to the natural clock of the sun, you know, because, you know, all the plants go to sleep, so you don't deal with them at night. And, you know, like Prabhu was saying, is the morning and the evening, that's your main time for the spiritual activities. So it all works out in this natural kind of way, but it's work. It's so anything is work, but it's just like people are, you know, committed to, you know, or resigned to the fact that they may be doing 2 to 4 hours of commuting every day to work. You know, and so if you're doing farming, what's the commute? You walk out of your house, walk to the barn, get what you need, and go out to the field. The field's right there. So there's no commute, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. So you've saved yourself 2 to 4 hours. So, but that going to the barn, carrying that, oh, that's so much work, and that's so much trouble that they don't want to take, but somehow or another, they're happy to sit stuck in their car and, you know, on the highway, you know, in a jam for an hour every day, you know, and then the rest of the time they're moving here and there, looking for the parking space, going this and that. And, you know, I mean, just somehow they're conditioned to that, and that's all right.
Also, Maharaj, then they do extra waste of time by doing workout, which actually absolutely produces nothing.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, it's very important for health, this, that. So you need to do that.
Yeah, well, before you walk out to the fields and you walk back and you do the work and you don't need to do a workout. That's the thing. The guy goes out and does the work in the field and it's fine. I mean, you know, that's the natural thing. But then for the city person, oh, you know, that's so unsophisticated. We go to the gym. But like you said, you know, what does it develop? Doesn't develop any particular health. You know, it's just like you see these, remember we had this one labor in the Gurukul, super skinny. I mean, like skinny, like he's just bones with skin on it. But he could sit there all day holding one of these, you know, daws, these big machetes that they use to cut bamboo. And they're heavy. They weigh, you know, I think a few kilos like that. And he can be wielding that all day. But if you look at him, he is skin and bones, you know? And I guarantee if you take one of these, you know, buff guys from the gym with the six-pack or eight-pack, he wouldn't last, you know, 20 minutes using that machete. So the thing is like Prabhu has said, they may develop some, you know, mass, you know, by their workout and their protein and how they do it all. But at the same time, it's what can they do with it? Well, the other one is just natural. You just do that work and you go on and it maintains the health. You're getting the fresh air. You're getting the sun. You know, you're getting all these things.
And you're getting your food.
And you're getting your food, most important. Yes, you're getting your food. Yeah, so it's just there. In other words, you're going to have things I will not get. I will save. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, they have all these machines, so one machine does the work for 100 people. Now what do those 100 people do to make money and live? So Prabhupada's point is by this natural lifestyle, Krishna's giving everything for everybody. There's enough food on the planet, just they don't know, they don't distribute it properly because of this sense of ownership and that they have, and a lack of sense of charity. So there's plenty of food, it's just not distributed properly because somebody wants to make a profit. You know, every year, you know, you hear about it now and again, but it's a standard thing, is that at least in America, as on a regular basis, they're taking crops and just plowing them back into the earth. They don't even harvest them, or they do harvest and they find they're too much, they dump them into the ocean or, you know, into a big pit and cover them over, because they don't want the market rate to go down. They have so much surplus that if it goes into the market, then their potatoes, instead of being, you know, whatever it is, you know, €3, you know, a kilo, then we'll go drop down to one or something. And they don't want that. So they just get rid of it. You know, and why not? Okay, you don't want to keep it, then send it somewhere where they need it. But no, they can't do that. Their heart is too miserly, you know, because that means it's work and I'm losing money. Well, you know, yeah, it's sad. The Krishna's giving enough. They're just not using it properly. Okay, so I guess we'll stop here. Jai Ho. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.